Last time I was here, a few weeks ago, we were talking about dukkha. And I just want to do a very quick reminder about a little bit of the summary of that. So if you weren't here, don't worry about it. The recording is on the Marin Sangha website, but I'll just scoop you up and bring you up to date. So we talked about this beautiful teaching from Norman Fisher that says dukkha is not a mistake. It's not a correctable situation. It's human consciousness. And you know, when I read that, I felt so much relief. That's right. Dukkha is not necessarily something to be solved. He says dukkha is every moment, every experience of our lives, not just the things that obviously seem to be dukkha, like pain and suffering and loss. And those are built into every moment and they are painful. But pain and suffering and loss, even if they don't appear on the surface, they're there. It is the dukkha. And he goes on to say, the great and beautiful secret of meditation practice is this. You can experience dukkha with equanimity. You know, that is such a profoundly important teaching, that we can experience the ups and downs with a quality of spaciousness. It's just a basic fact of life. So we talked a lot about that. And then I offered this poem from Hafiz, which pretty much sums up what Norman is talking about. You carry all the ingredients to turn your life into a nightmare. Don't mix them. You carry all the ingredients to turn your existence into joy. Mix them. Mix them. So I want to talk about joy tonight, especially because we just did this mudita meditation. And I love talking about joy as really the doorway into metta and compassion. Because mudita is one aspect of joy, but I want to broaden out our thinking. I like to broaden out my own thinking about joy. So here's some ways to start to explore this. This comes from Ross Gay. Ross Gay is a brilliant essayist and poet, teaches writing. He's fabulous. And this is from his book called The Book of Delights. Among the most beautiful things I've ever heard anyone say came from my student, Bethany, talking about her pedagogical aspirations or ethos, how she wanted to be a teacher and what she wanted her classrooms to be. She said, "What if we joined our wildernesses together?" Sit with that for a minute. That the body, the life, might carry a wilderness, an unexplored territory, and that yours and mine might somewhere, somehow meet, might even join. And what if the wilderness, perhaps the densest wild in there, thickets, bogs, swamps, uncrossable ravines and rivers, is our sorrow? It astonishes me sometimes how every person I get to know, everyone, regardless of everything, by which I mean everything, lives with some profound personal sorrow. Not to mention the existential sorrow we may all be afflicted with, which is that we and what we love will die. Is this sorrow the great wilderness? Is the sorrow the true wild? And if we join them, your wild to mine, what's that? What if we joined our sorrows? And what if that is joy? That's the question. How do we live inside the reality, the actual lived experience of joys and sorrows, and know them as one, how they support each other? And so often when we are in despair or experiencing anything that is painful, distressing in any way, dukkha, we often want to know where it's come from, which is a sensible thing, right? It's logical to know, where is my discomfort coming from? Because if I know where it's coming from, maybe I can avoid it in the future. But if we take that way of being in relationship with dukkha, that dukkha is just a fact of life, there's actually not a lot to solve. And I want to propose a different question. Instead of, where is my suffering coming from? Where is this suffering leading? Where is the suffering leading? You know, it led me to Dharma practice. Maybe it led you to it also. And I'm not discounting the value of understanding patterns and habits that don't support our well-being. I'm not saying don't do that, but I'm saying now let's add to that to, okay, what am I learning? Where is this leading me? And so there is this relief of shared sorrow that can be experienced as joy. Do you know that experience of sharing something painful with somebody else and then you feel better? You feel a little bit better. We're not holding the weight all by ourselves. So that can be an experience, a flavor of joy. So the relief of shared sorrow is this intimate companioning. Because maybe what we're doing ultimately is companioning and consoling and celebrating. And when we can do that, we're there for all of it, for all of the joys and all of the sorrows. David White has this very beautiful book called Consolations, which is a series of essays on different words. And he wrote this piece on joy. And what he says joy is the ability ultimately through all these experiences to be able to say, I was here and you were here and together we made a world. I love that. I was here and you were here and together we made a world. And that is joy. Whatever it is, we are connecting our experiences and we're doing it every time we come to Sangha. We're showing up with our hearts and our minds to the degree that we can. And I think that's joy. Another way to experience joy, I think, are these very, very fundamental and oft quoted instructions from Mary Oliver, who said, pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. I really love that. Pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. Clear, poignant, beautiful instructions for living a life of presence and connection. So think about that. When you pay attention, the chance of being astonished increases, right? And I'm not just saying joyful astonishment. We can be astonished by difficulty also when we're really paying attention and we start seeing suffering everywhere. It can be, the amount of it can be astonishing. And we can also be astonished by the amount of beauty that is around us when we pay attention. So to be astonished, it wakes us up to whatever is here right now. And that's what we're doing, right? Our practice is waking us up to whatever is here right now. And then when you tell about it, I love this, you're connecting with somebody. You know, that ability, that experience of saying, I want to tell you what happened yesterday. Or somebody says, I want to tell you what happened yesterday. Such a beautiful thing. Or, you know, if somebody says in kind of a fun, anticipatory, like they've got this great secret they want to tell you, I got to tell you what happened. You know, with that kind of excitement that's behind it, then you're connecting. And it's in the experience of healthy connections that we thrive. That's really what we're doing, is practicing these many ways to thrive in our lives, training to be present for ourselves and each other. And I think what happens out of this is that we start to make a world that is a little more fair, a little more considered, a little more kind. So talking a little bit more about joy, I'm not talking about Hallmark, happy, happy, joy, joy, you know, SpongeBob cartoon joy. I am really talking about these experiences that are uplifting, that come from connection and belonging, contentment, ease, delight, a sense of uplift or even relief. And the Buddha said in the Dhammapada, happiness is contentment with whatever there is. Now that might be hard to think about. Happiness is contentment with whatever there is. And you know, the way I relate to that is if we go back to dukkha experienced with equanimity is no longer dukkha. When we put spaciousness around anything, it can breathe a little bit more. So if we use the word contentment, contentment is being, having some capacity with whatever there is. So happiness is contentment with whatever this is, with the ability to say, all right, this is what's happening right now, but not getting bumped out to a place where we go into extreme stress because things aren't the way we want them. We have the ability to say, right, this is what is happening. Before Colin Powell, former chairman of Joint State Chiefs, before he died in October of 2021, Bob Woodward interviewed him in July. And he said, so Bob Woodward said to him, you know, so how are you? You're coming to the end of your life. This must be really difficult. And he said, look, I've got multiple myeloma cancer and I've got Parkinson's disease, but otherwise I'm fine. Don't feel sorry for me, for God's sake. I'm 84 years old. I haven't lost a day of life fighting these two diseases. I'm in good shape. That is happiness is contentment with whatever there is, right? This is the long view. Last time I was here, we talked about the long view and maintaining that. Not only having the long view for everything, but, you know, we go back and forth, but this piece of happiness is contentment with whatever there is. Okay, I'm 84 years old. I have cancer. I have Parkinson's. I've had a great life. Don't feel sorry for me because I'm okay. I hope I have the ability to say that. I think that's an extraordinary perspective and what an enlightened view. And it probably helped him tremendously. So from the perspective of the Dharma, there are four kinds of Dharma joys. And I want to talk about that a little bit. The first is meditative joy. These deepening states of absorption and concentration, kind of a bliss energy that comes about. And hopefully we've all experienced these moments of true ease and peace in meditation where whether you are tightly focused on the breath, loosely focused on whatever you're focusing on, you get that sense of ease and peace of, oh yeah, this meditation is really supportive. Now, sometimes for some people in deepening states of absorption and concentration, there can be blissful energies that move through the body. And that can feel really good. And I remember, it doesn't happen for everybody, but it is a fairly common byproduct of the concentrated mind, which is known as this Dharma joy, of this bliss energy. And I'm forgetting right now the word for it, but there's a Pali word for it. And if you know it, just unmute and tell me, because I'm just blanking on what this is. One of the factors of awakening. Anyway, do you know it? PT, thank you, PT, exactly. So that's what we're talking about, but it's seductive. And there was a time in my practice where I had lots and lots of PT in my meditations, and it was so seductive that I lost track of what was the point of meditation, because it's so easy to go after that. I was trained enough in those deepening states that I could experience those bliss energies after like 27 minutes. I knew when it was going to happen. And so I would do these longer meditations because it felt so good. And then I realized through a whole bunch of different experiences that that wasn't the point at all, that it was a byproduct. And in the beginning of our practice tonight, I said, you know, we come back and say, what am I learning? Why am I doing this? I realized I wasn't learning really anything. I was learning if I sat long enough, those energies would move. So there is a joy that comes out of this. And Wendell Berry says, happiness is the onset of unexpected good. You know, it was a piece of unexpected good. When I first started meditating many, many years ago, I was doing it because I was managing my teenagers, actually, you know, just what is it like to raise teenagers? And I would go into my bedroom and I would shut the door and I would stay there meditating as long as I could so I didn't have to be in the conflict of teenagers. And then some unexpected good started coming out of it, which is I felt better. I felt better because I was regulating my nervous system, quite literally. All right, so the Dharma joy, meditative joy is the first one. The second one is so beautiful, the joy of understanding and realization. This is so beautiful. These are these aha moments, these moments really of deeper understandings, and I think of them as moments of awakening, when some insight arises, some piece of wisdom that actually sticks with you, that can change you, like, oh yeah, now I get it. And in fact, Sayadaw Utejaniya said, you should be happy when you know or understand anything. Isn't that great? You should be happy when you know or understand anything. We don't have to get it all in order to feel this quality of happiness or joy or contentment. But when you figure one little thing out and you get that, that feels good. And it builds momentum. Right? If I can do this practice and I have a study and we converse, we talk with each other and we meditate, all these different aspects of study, and we start really understanding what are the causes of greed and ill will and delusion, and what are the causes of non-greed, non-ill will, and clarity, those are these aha moments. This is the joy of understanding and realization. And it feels really good, you know, that moment of figuring something out that you might have been struggling with, that really becomes that piece of, I didn't know it before, or I kind of knew it before, and now I know it with an uppercase K, like I know. And it's very supportive, and it is a source of joy. And the thing about this is when you have these moments of realization, let yourself know it. Let yourself know it. There's a way in which we might not celebrate or acknowledge our own deepening understandings and might be quick to go on to the next thing. Okay, now I know that. It's not that important, or it's important, but, you know, okay, if I can do that, I'm just going to move on. Recognize your achievements. Recognize what you're learning and how you're growing, and stay with that. Don't be so quick to say what's next. One of my students recently finished her doctorate, and it was really exciting. You know, it was such a beautiful accomplishment to finish her doctorate. And she said to me, I just finished and I'm already thinking, okay, fine, I did that. Now what's next? And we spent a long time talking about, Whoa. No, this was big. This is a huge effort. Let's celebrate your efforts. The joy of realization, of understanding, to let yourself feel your own goodness and the fruits of your efforts. Kurt Vonnegut said, please notice when you're happy and exclaim or murmur or think at some point, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. You know, let yourself feel this joy. We don't need to tamp it down. You don't need to tamp it down. The third of these Dharma joys is the joy that we feel when our sila is in order, from our ethical conduct, our morality, living in line with the values of non-harming. And that is different, to live in line with the values of non-harming, which is up to each of us to really study and work with. That is different from making commitments around non-harming that can't be upheld, right? Because we can't, if we set ourselves into a place that's so narrow of, I will never harm a living being again, that's pretty impossible if we take it down to ants or mold or mosquitoes or, you know, things that are impossible. You could never, I could never drive a car again. Because what about all those bugs that die on the windshield? Like, truly, there are places where, I mean, this is really sad, but there are places that have frog migrations at different times of the year. These teeny tiny little frogs that can cover a roadway. What are you going to do? That's really, that one is hard. Do you stop and wait for 6 hours? Or do you get out and brush them aside? I mean, to actually wrestle with these experiences is what we're doing in our practice. So it's delightful when you can remember and you know that you're living in line with your commitment to study non-harming and to watch how it shows up in your life. And we do it incrementally. And it is a wrestle, I think. Do you eat meat? Do you not eat meat? Do you kill bugs in the house? Do you not kill bugs in the house? Oh, all of these different ways that we meet this experience. It's a struggle, I think. It's impossible to live in our current culture without causing some degree of harm, but it is totally possible to work with it and to be aware of it and to set your life up in line with these values. So when you feel, when this is said to be a source of joy. And I think it is, to know that your life is an expression of wholesome values. And when I blow it, course correct. You know, it doesn't have to be like my whole practice is shot. It's not. It's especially not when I blow it, because when I make a mistake and I have the ability to say, I am so sorry, in one way or another, I have that ability to take responsibility and course correct. That's our practice, right? Meeting what is here with this kindness, with this bravery. Sylvia Wurstein says, any antipathy in the mind is itself the cause of suffering. The intention to meet this moment fully and as a friend is where we start, because that's the only place the mind can rest. The point is to habituate the mind to kindness. So when the antipathy in the mind comes, and knowing that that in and of itself is a cause of suffering, we shift, we meet the moment with, this is who I am, this is how it is, the pain, the joy, the suffering, the sorrow, all of it. And we habituate the mind to kindness, start getting used to it. We practice with it. So that's the third kind of Dharma joy, is remembering your sila. And I don't mean it like, I remember your sila. No, it's not like that. It's like, remember your good work, right? Know who you are. You're here because you've made a commitment to working this practice. And the fourth, well, actually, we're getting to that, which is mudita, of course. But even in the Metta Sutta, this piece at the end that says, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, is not born again into these repetitive cycles of suffering. So even in the Metta Sutta, by not holding to fixed views, that clenched mind, we can open up, which brings us to the joy of understanding and realization, which brings us into an intimate relationship with our ethical practices, the joy of release, the joy of letting go. And of course, lots of things get in the way, right? The praise and the blame, the gain and the loss, the pleasure and the pain, all of these vicissitudes get in the way. Mudita. I love this part of the practice because it just feels so good to feel happy for somebody else's happiness. And, you know, we have mirror neurons, so we pick up on the vibe that is around us. And we all know what it's like to walk into a room and feel joyful energy. And we also all know what it's like to walk into a room and feel its opposite, like, ooh, what's going on in there? And so my point with this is that when we get a vicarious hit of somebody else's joy, it's good for us. It's really good for our whole being. And I think that it's the hardest of the Brahmaviharas, because, and you might not agree, but let me just try this on. To truly rejoice in somebody else's success or their happiness, I have to get out of my own way. 100%, because it is not about me in that moment at all. And we are so self-referential, because isn't everything about me? Right? So, no, it's not. So if I can not feel envy, jealousy, resentment, the tape that says, oh, they always get the good stuff, fairness, unfairness, you know, whatever all of those lines are, but I actually feel pure happiness for their happiness, I think that's the best. And then I have access to metta. And then I have access to compassion in a much deeper way. And the mudita requires equanimity, right? It requires a broader perspective to be able to take in what is happening. But back to this mirror neurons thing about that, how we pick up the vibe. Mudita happens, this is what we feel when we attend a wedding. And we're not the ones getting married, but there's something going on there. There's so much collective joy. Or if you've ever had the great good fortune of attending a birth of somebody else's baby, that's an extraordinary experience. I was in April, my son and his wife, I was visiting my son and his wife, and they live in Colorado. And we were there for Passover, and they had some of their very dear friends had come for the Seder, and their very dear friends had just had a baby. It was their second baby. They had a 4-year-old and a newborn, and the dad's mother and grandmother was there. So it was the infant's parents, their parents, and the great-grandma. And I got to see the great grandma hold the infant for the first time. And I burst into tears because it was so amazing. And I had to excuse myself because this was not my moment. This was about them. And I kept it quiet, but I literally had to walk out. And my son said, Mom, what is going on? I just said, did you see what just happened? Great grandma got to hold this baby who's a month old, and it was the first time. And so these moments of mudita, when they happen, they're not in our control. You know, we just have to be available to be present for what is happening around us. And I'll never forget that moment. You know, I will absolutely never forget that moment. And it was very different than when I got to introduce my babies to my grandmother, my grandparents who were still alive at that time, because it was about me. It was my baby. It was my grandparents. But this was truly the mudita of feeling what was happening in these lines of the generations being together. So that appreciative joy is so profound, and I think it changes our wiring. I think it changes the heart, it changes the mind for sure. So it's right to feel joy. It is really right to feel your own joy, to feel the joys of others. Have you ever had the experience of calling somebody up and saying, tell me something good? I just had a really rough day. Tell me something good. That's what we're asking for. We're asking to be supported by somebody else's good fortune. And then when we have it to share, I know it can be tricky because sometimes it can feel like maybe there's some arrogance or conceit calling somebody up and saying, oh my God, the best thing happened. But you can do it with your tight friends. You can do it with your Sangha members, I hope. You know, when we understand what we're doing here, we're sharing this joy because my joy is yours and yours is mine. And this is what was meant by, in Ross Gay's period, can my wilderness meet your wilderness? When my vulnerability meets your vulnerability, compassion arises and we know each other as the same. And this is what love is. So I'll end with this piece from Brian Doyle, who's another one of my favorite writers. He said, "This is what I know, that the small is huge, that the tiny is vast, that pain is part and parcel of the gift of joy, and that this is love. And then there's everything else. You either walk toward love or away from it with every breath you draw." So thank you, everybody. We have time to talk with each other a bit. Nancy, please. Hi. You're not mute. I mean, you are muted. So there you go.
Thank you. I just wanted to share that I used to work at hospice and we had a saying. And the saying was, grief shared is cut in half.
Yeah.
And grief held alone is doubled.
There you go. I think that's exactly right. Because that is the experience of it, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Grief shared is cut in half. Grief held alone is doubled or tripled or quadrupled. It's right. So big. It's so big.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Patty.
Heidi?
Yes.
During that talk, I fell in love with you. I fell in love with every person you quoted from. And I just want to thank you for bringing such a rich and beautiful perspective to our Sangha. I take refuge in the Sangha because of everything you said about sharing joy and sharing grief. And my gratitude to the Sangha for their support and to you for that beautiful teaching is just enormous. So thank you,
Patty. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mary.
So I have to say that Mudita is one of my favorites of their Brahma Viharas. And especially as I'm getting older, but one of the things that's so lovely is we have a park by my house, you know, and if I want a shot of Mudita, all I have to do is walk by the park and look at the kids on the swings.
Yeah.
You know, and right there you have it. I mean, you have it. It's just like they're like having such a great time. I love it. And then lately there has been a couple of times where there's a path that I walk on and I'm old, but this woman is older. And she's got the walking sticks, and you know, she's just, you know, got a little hat on, and she's walking on this path, and there's like the waterway, the flowers, and stuff like that, and you know, it's not the smooth, easy walk, but you could just see how much she's enjoying this, you know, what she can do.
Yeah,
and and our greetings to each other, and our comments about the thing. It's like seeing her and seeing how happy she is that she can still do this. It's like another blast of mudita. I just think that it is, there's so many opportunities during the course of the day that, you know, that, and for me, it's like there's the mudita, and then there's like kind of an undercurrent of gratitude that comes up as well for me.
I think that's right.
And it's just really lovely. And I just remember watching the parents dropping their kids off at school and the kids hugging their mom and dad and all those things. Mudita, mudita, mudita. You know, anytime you see someone sharing love or whatever it is, that's that's a place that you can cross over and experience that. So thank you for this talk, because I just think that a lot of people don't talk about mudita, and it really mm-hmm. is a joy shared. Yes,
it is. And you know, I would venture to say that because of your practice, because of your training, you know what to notice. And because,
and I think
right.
Yeah. And the more you notice it, again, I think the more that you notice it, it's like my gratitude practice. It provides you with more opportunities as well.
That's right.
And it's been easier and easier for me to get out of my way.
Yep. And that's really, I think, what happens. The more this practice, we are infused with the Dharma and with the practice and with the Sangha, we do get out of our way. And it doesn't mean we always do, but more often than not, that you can see the beauty of the kids at the swing set and feel that joy and not feel like, oh, I wish I could still get on the swing. It's not, because you probably don't want to get on the swing. maybe not. Maybe you do. But all the things that you point to, getting out of my own way and seeing the good. Yeah, thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Deborah.
Well, I already fell in love with you. So during this talk,
thank you.
I fell in love with you the first time you came to Sangha. So during this talk, I decided I'm coming to live with you.
Okay, good.
In the spare bedroom.
Okay, but good.
I also just want to really thank you for when I'm browsing around and grumbling about, oh, I forgot to water the plants, or I have to go to the market again, I forgot something. You're finding these beautiful things, these gorgeous, gorgeous things, these enlightening things to bring to us. And I'm really grateful. So if I come and live with you, maybe I'll learn how to change the proportions of how I'm spending my time. And I just wanted to thank you for all of that. And also, this seems to happen so often in Sangha. Everything you said related to, this was for me a full week. a medical test, helping other friends, feeling like garbage myself. Aww. And yesterday I got to spend time talking about mudita with my friend who's recovering from a really, and dealing with a lot of stuff, and her two dogs. And these dogs charge my mudita. When they come with their joy and their ebullience, is that a word?
I'm forgetting. Ebullience. Ebullience.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm suffering from anomia these days. But when these dogs come to me and get in my face with their innocent eyes and their licky tongues and their fluffy coats, and they just say, play with me, throw this ball. They're so happy. They're so innocent. They're so full of love and joy and curiosity. I'm happy for them that they're happy, because they're rescue dogs and they suffered.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
They suffered. So I'm happy for them. And then their joy, their excitement, it becomes mine.
That's right. And you take that in and you let it become yours, because what a wonderful thing. Because why not? You know, Thich Nhat Hanh said, happiness is available. Please help yourself. What a concept.
Yeah.
The conditions, even in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha says, the conditions for happiness are already here. Notice. They're already here.
Yeah, what Mary was just saying too about noticing, and what you
that's right.
What you notice, where you're mm-hmm. putting, where I'm putting my attention. And the other thing, and I'll stop talking, is this friend who's recovering, she's starting to get that long-term illness and long-term ongoing pain that it didn't stop 2 months ago like she thought it would. I felt happy for her and relieved for her, because she was getting a bigger picture of her situation, which I saw months ago and was hoping wouldn't happen, and still hoping it won't happen. But
seeing her come to this bigger, what I would call a more spacious mm-hmm. understanding of what she's going through.
And there's happiness in that, right?
Oh, I was delighted with joy when she stopped me on my way out and had a private conversation with me, separate from the other people in the house, about how she was figuring this out. And of course, I've been living with it for decades. So I was really happy for her.
This is the joy of understanding and realization. That's what that is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can come live with me if you want. Vivian, so nice to see you again.
Same here. One day.
One day. Yeah. Go ahead, Vivian.
Thank you, Heidi. Deborah, I share many of the things that you said, and here I am smiling and verging on laughter. So that's really lovely. I want to admit publicly, I don't know if I've ever done it before, that I used to be a very angry, jealous, even vengeful person. I found it very hard to feel any happiness for anybody who had something that I not only didn't have, but I knew I would never have. And it wasn't until I started studying the Dharma, studying what the Buddha had to say, or, you know, what we have of the suttas, and learning specifically about mudita.
Yeah.
I don't think I had ever heard the concept presented in that way. And I used to get so hard in my heart when people would just come up to me and share their stories of joy. And mudita taught me, mudita presented a way to turn my experience around completely.
Yeah.
And I am no longer that nasty person inside.
I have so much, I honor this so much, Vivian, that you could share this with us because of the healing that you've done.
Thank
and, you know, the armoring of the heart is real. And I think many of us are conditioned with it for lots of reasons, and pain hurts. And that feeling of jealousy or envy is painful. And to come into a practice that says, yes, that's painful, and here's a way to meet it, is brilliant, right? Because this is the awakening, this is the healing that happens, that we learn to be with our own pain, our own sorrow. But we're more than that, right? We are more than that, because pain can exist and so can joy all at the same time. And that's a training. That is a training, because you might, somebody who is not involved in a practice that teaches that might say, what are you, crazy? You know, what are you talking about? But this is a practice that truly helps us be with our suffering. Yeah. Thank you for this. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And thank you back.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anybody else? I love the practice of mudita. And in the last couple of weeks, a couple of people have said, it just feels like it's the ignored Brahmavihara. And let's not ignore it. No, bring it in. Let it be very much a part of your life if you can. Yes, Deborah.
I just want to say, in support of what Vivian just said, many, many years ago, I was on retreat with a teacher, and there was no place to have a private interview. So we're sitting in a car, and I was talking about my resentment and my jealousy, and he talked to me about mudita. And this was a long time ago, And I found that I could still feel envious, but not jealous.
So that's interesting, right?
Yeah. So it's like jealous is, you shouldn't have it, I should. It's ugly. Whereas envy is, oh, I'd like some of that. Can I have a piece of that pizza? Or, you know, you want to
get yeah, good day. Point, right?
You know, it's a, they're just different for me. Yeah. One is yeah. more mean and one is
yeah.
is more sad and one is just sort of, ooh, I like those shiny. I like your earrings right now. I'd like to have them. But I'm really happy that I get to look at them on you. So
yeah,
he taught me
it
that.
Is. It's different flavors. So, you know, we could get into what's classically known as the near and far enemies. And we could call it the near and far misses of what each of these are. And maybe we'll do that another time. But yes, there are different, and this continuum line, there are different flavors of this. And it's not a linear experience. You know, as we cultivate mudita, there are times it's easier than other times. There are certain events that are much more difficult than other events. So just like with metta, we start where it's easiest. We don't start with the people that we find the most difficult. We just start with the places that it's accessible.